This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube.
Great win. Complete game versus the Devils. And a critical point against the Stanley Cup champions. Not too bad. Hey, Flames fans, Brad Berube here. Flames Unfiltered, episode number 13, recorded on November 10th, 2019, and a busy weekend for Flames. Thursday saw probably what we would all agree upon as an all-time season-high performance as they knocked off the Devils 5-2. And then Saturday night took on the defending Stanley Cup champions at the Olympic Saddle Dome. I shouldn't call it the Olympic Saddle Dome anymore. It's a Scotiabank Saddle Dome. I still call it the Olympic Saddle Dome. I don't know why. Saturday night, things didn't look so hot in the beginning. But the Flames figured out a way to score two goals late and salvage that point. A critical point, actually. You know, when your team's not playing good, you need to pick up points at every single chance that you can. And after Thursday night, I was pretty pumped up. I was pretty happy. I felt like the things were swinging upward. And then Saturday night, as Twitter went crazy with negative talk about the Flames, I just think, man, are we overreacting? We're overreacting. Right now, they're actually tracking higher in points than they were last year at this time. And I don't even care if we get as many points as we had last year. I just want to get into the playoffs. And I think that's the whole goal here. I think people need to relax. I think I need to relax. I'm going to like things. I'm going to dislike things. That's how it is after every single game. But getting a point on Saturday night, I thought was pretty good and pretty big. We got five games coming up ahead that are going to be very, very, very difficult. And will also be very, very telling. A light week for the Flames this week. And then it's time to get to work.
Every team, everywhere. The Hockey Podcast Network.
The Hockey Podcast Network has some exciting news to announce. Former NHL player Terry Ryan. You've seen him on Spit and Chicklets. He is top-notch entertainment. Great stories from his days in the National Hockey League. He has joined the network and will have a weekly show called Tales with TR, a hockey podcast. Check it out in the near future on the Hockey Podcast Network. Two games to recap. Two games. Two good games, I thought. I don't know. Thursday night, the Devils come into town. The Devils are not very good. Can we just say that right now? And, of course, what do you think the Flames do? Yeah, let's spot them a goal right away. Hughes scores the rookie on a pretty nice goal. 1-0 right away. Then it seemed like Calgary got things together. And in the second, four goals were rattled off in quick fashion as Ryan scores, Monahan scores, Backlund scores, and Hanifin scores. And, you know, it's good to see those four names come up. Ryan's worked hard all year, had some tough luck this year. Gets a key goal. Monahan gets one, and we need him to get going. Oof, we need him to get going. Backlund, who I think has been playing very, very good as of late, gets a goal. And then Hanifin finishes off the night with a goal and two assists. And that is a great effort for the back-end defenseman who has a new pairing. He's been with Hamonic for pretty much his whole time in Calgary. And now we're seeing him with Rasmus Anderson, which is probably a preview of the Flames' top deep pairing for the future. Everything seemed to be clicking good on Thursday night. Good complete effort. Very, very happy after the game. It was one of those games where you could actually, as a Flames fan, sit back and not feel so damn stressed when you're watching the game. You're able to be a little bit more laid back. Then Saturday night came and the Stanley Cup champions showed up in Calgary. And what do you think happens? Yep, spot them 2 goals right away. And Calgary battled back in the third. I felt like Calgary chased this game all night long. I thought the first line was pretty darn ineffective. I thought the line with Tkachuk, Backlund, and Mangiapane was very good the whole night. I thought the fourth line struggled. I thought Lucic and Jankowski struggled. And I thought the Sam Bennett line was just fine. But Calgary just had limited scoring chances. Limited. St. Louis defense collapses so well and keeps you to the outside, taking away those chances. Calgary goes into the third down. They're down 2-0. Things don't look so bright. Matthew Tkachuk figures out a way to single-handedly get a goal, gets Flames back 2-1. And then there's a major turning point as far as I'm concerned. Sam Bennett gets hit in the corner by McEachran, and he didn't like it very much. But he didn't go over and fight him. He waited, and as he came up the ice, right in front of the bench, McEachran had the puck in his feet, and Sam Bennett just leveled him. And it's like the whole attitude of the team just changed. And I wasn't talked a lot Saturday night about that play, and I do believe that was a turning point. Calgary gets another goal from the unlikely source of Hamonic, which, as you all know, I'm a big Hamonic fan, and he struggled a little bit this year, so it was nice to see him pot one, and we are tied. OT starts, of course, 3-on-3 possession, back and forth, and I didn't think Calgary looked too bad. I really didn't. But unfortunately, Gaudreau does turn one over, and not good results. Anytime you're going to have turnovers, it's going to lead to problems, and Brody is forced to haul down. St. Louis Blue breaking to the net. Some people argued the call. I don't see how you can argue this call. He hauled him down. He reached in with his free hand, and he did what he had to do. Brody got absolutely crucified by fans after the game on social media and the radio shows. Absolutely crucified, and I don't know. I'm getting sick of it. I know I crucify players and I complain about things, and I'll be complaining about one later on in the show. But come on, guys, we got to let up a little bit. This is getting a little bit out of hand. Perron scores the goal. St. Louis wins 3-2, but you know what? I wasn't that all that upset. Calgary salvages a point, a very, very critical point, and we get out of the weekend with 3 out of 4.
Inside Edge Hockey News, bringing you inside the game.
As we prefaced earlier in the St. Louis Blues game on Saturday night, we welcome to the show Tom Franklin from Blue Notes Podcast. He is a St. Louis Blues correspondent for the Hockey Podcast Network. You can check out his podcast twice a week, Blue Notes Podcast, on the Hockey Podcast Network. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show. Good to have you joining me after a big win for your Blues last night. 3-2 win in Calgary, 7th straight victory for your Blues. How do you feel about that win?
Man, you know, I tell you what, going to Western Canada for most NHL teams is, it's always one of the least favorite road trips that a team that's not already in that part of the North America makes every year. And not only that, but you know, this caps off a 3-game set where they started off in Vancouver, then they went to Edmonton the next night, and now they cap it off in Calgary. 3 very good teams that are at the tippy top of the Western Conference this year. At least Vancouver was when the road trip started. You know, coming off of last night's game, you know, it was a 3-2 win in overtime. The Blues, you know, we kind of talked a little bit before we started doing this. The Blues have a knack for squandering third period leads. They tend to kind of go into a bit of a shell, you know, and they park the bus a little bit, and they kind of allow the attack to come in. And it's unfortunately for the Blues, I mean, in past years, their defense has been really like rock solid, and they don't, and in the past, they haven't allowed a lot of shots, so they could get away with that. This year, they're not so much. I mean, because it seems like that even though the Blues are on this streak, and you know they you know swept the Western Canadian teams. They're getting outshot every game, and I feel there's a bit of good fortune to the Blues being, you know, on this great run.
You know, you mentioned the shots, and that's one thing Calgary has really struggled this year with, allowing 30 plus shots a game. And I always kind of set 30 as your marker. If you're going to allow over 30, it's going to be pretty tough to put together consecutive wins. And that's something Calgary has really struggled with. Last night, they hold the Blues to 28 shots and still find themselves in a predicament where they're forced to go to overtime. Now, you mentioned the comeback that Calgary did have, and it was a little bit, I guess Calgary has been known to come back in the third period last year and this year. And it's something that's going to get them into trouble. And you can't keep, you know, living and dying on trying to come back in the third period. And last night when the game did go to overtime, I just kind of had a feeling like, yeah, you hate to just take the 1 point and be happy, but I kind of had that feeling last night. St. Louis had locked down pretty good on Calgary all night long, I thought, and Calgary's chances were really limited. It was one of those games where you watch the Flames, is just like, man, we're not getting any chances here at all.
Well, even on your side, I mean, there was a little bit of good fortune. I mean, first of all, Matthew Tkachuk's goal, that was a beautifully set up goal by Tkachuk himself, getting into space like that, you know, getting into the slot and just kind of having that eagle eye to be at the right place at the right time. But then Travis Hamonic's goal, you know, not long after that, I mean, Travis Hamonic is not a goal scorer from what I can tell. I mean, he's played in over 600 games, has 35 goals in his career, and goes backhand on Binnington. I think that's when Binnington went back. But, you know, sometimes, you know, as I was saying, there's some fortune, some good fortune with the Blues in this run. And to come back, I think the Flames, at least for that one goal, had a little bit of good fortune.
Absolutely. You know, when you look at the goal that Hamonic scored, Binnington did kind of misplay it out into the front of the net, similar to how Riddick let in the first one early in the game, where it was almost like he turned his paddle the opposite direction that he should have and deflected it in front of the net, allowing the wraparound goal. But it's funny how, you know, you get a goalie like Binnington, who I feel has been, I mean, how do you not say out of this world since coming into the league, and Riddick for that matter this year has really been probably Calgary's best player. It's funny how when Riddick does that, it seems like the hockey gods turn the tables and have one come back the other way.
Yeah, it really kind of is funny how that works out. And, you know, to your point on the goalies, I mean, Binnington, of course, we all know his story from, you know, earlier this year, and, you know, kind of becoming the guy out of nowhere to lead the Blues to the Cup. And since then, since the season has started, he's been pretty good. He's not been great. He's not been elite, but he's not been bad either. And, you know, he's the kind of goalie that he's pretty consistent, nine in and nine out. He actually doesn't give up a lot of those bad goals, like the one that he did with Hamonic. He's usually very stable, and that's something the Blues have not had in recent years. I mean, I can go on and on about shaky Jakey Allen, you know, in, you know, the former starting goalie for the Blues, now the backup. But Binnington, he's just extremely stable. He's extremely steady, and it's refreshing.
You know, one player that really impresses me every time I watch the Blues play, and that's Robert Thomas. And he's a player that just kind of emerged last year. And when I'm talking to hockey people, I always talk about how people and players, you notice them more once the playoffs start, and you kind of, in a 7-game series, get to really see a player develop in front of you. He's kind of the player last year that, to me, really stepped up for the Blues. Talk about his development and how that impact has been for your team.
Robert Thomas has been one of the most exciting players on the ice night in and night out. Even if he isn't putting points on the board, it seems like he's always looking to create. He's a very creative guy with the puck, makes really good passes, is really pass first. I mean, he has a good shot. And we actually, during the Flames game last night, he had a really good chance to Riddick's right side that Riddick was quick enough to respond to. It's one of those backdoor kind of slappers that he had. Thomas has a really good shot. If there's one weakness that Thomas has, is that sometimes he's so creative-minded, he'll pass up shots, and he'll pass up ripe shots and ripe opportunities. I think he's coming out of that a little bit. I mean, keep in mind, the kid's only 21 years old. I mean, he's still, you know, I mean, the thought of him still continuing to grow is exciting because he's already a solid NHL contributor. He's a good kid, good personality, teammates like him, and he is just – he's really just come along, and I think he's only going to get better from here on out. Former first-round pick for the Blues, and he is part of this kind of new crop of Blues that's coming up. Thomas is obviously the leader of that. You have Klim Kostin down in San Antonio, who's having a pretty good start for the Rampage down there. He almost made the Blues this year, Kostin did, but they went with the veterans like Robbie Fabry and Zach Sanford over him. You have him, you have Jordan Kyrou, the former OHL Tilson Award winner. It's a pretty exciting time to be a Blues fan right now, and Thomas is really leading that charge.
You know, when I think of the St. Louis Blues and the games I've watched this year, I actually watched most of this four-game road trip that you guys had out west, but I think of depth, and I think of how important your depth is, and I look at players like Bozak and Sundquist and Sammy Blais, and I just, every time I watch him, I just think, wow, how important is he and the rest of these depth players to the success of the Blues?
And you're talking about Sammy Blais?
Yeah.
Sammy Blais, he's another one of those kids that kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he was a sixth round pick. He was a deep dive find out of Quebec. The Blues had a scout up there, and no one else was really high on Blais too much when he was drafted. This particular scout loved what he saw, and he like begged Doug Armstrong to take him at some point. He gets picked in the sixth round. Blais is a hardworking kid. I mean, he started off the year on the second line with the Blues. That's how highly they think of him. And Berube likes to shift his lines around a little bit. So, I mean, the fact he's not on the second line anymore, at least on a regular basis, isn't, I wouldn't look into that very much. He also got dinged a little bit this year. But Blais, you know, he's that guy that you put on a line with talented guys like O'Reilly and Perron. And Blais is just that heat-seeking missile out there where he's the one that's going in on the forecheck. You know, when the puck's dumped into the corner, you know, Blais is the one that's going in there, going after it. He's a very headstrong player, and he is going to be a very good power forward, I think, for years to come.
You know, as I was watching the game last night and seeing how it all played out, I thought, man, I felt like Calgary was kind of hanging on the whole game. And I kept, you know, when you're watching your team, you're always judging, like, how would we be against this team in the playoffs? And I kept thinking, man, I just feel like the Flames are lacking compared to the Blues. And then I also look and go, wow, they have Tarasenko out long-term with an injury and Steen out till December. How much of the injuries is that playing an impact, or do you feel like the Blues have just kind of just picked up their work boots and said, all right, we want them to come back soon, but we're gonna keep up the pace while they're gone?
Well, there's a saying, pressure makes diamonds, and right now I think the Blues felt a lot of pressure when Tarasenko went down to step up in his void. I get to go down into the locker room sometimes. I work for KMLX Radio in St. Louis, and I have credentials, and you know, a mantra that I kept hearing in that homestand when Tarasenko went down was Blues players saying that we all got to step up. We've all got to step up. We've all got to do it. And it wasn't like one player. It was everyone had to come up and chip in. And I think the injury for Tarasenko actually united the team somehow even more than they already were. Not that they were discombobulated before. They were coming off a bad stretch. You know the kind of the post Stanley Cup hangover that seems to happen quite often with teams. But they weren't discombobulated by any means. But then now you have your top offensive threat going down with an injury. You know, a guy that pumps 275 to 300 shots every season. You know, you got to fill that void somehow. So yep, you have a team really right now that is just kind of stepping up and filling in, you know, wherever they need to do. And this is, as you kind of pointed out, this is a team that has a lot of depth to where they can do that. Craig Berube always starts his fourth line for a reason. It's because Berube has four solid lines that he can go to at any point. and that fourth line plays their role. They can score. I mean, Barbashev scored early on, you know, in the Flames game. He's one of those fourth liners that comes up. Steen was a fourth liner. You know, Steen was kind of he's playing kind of the role of the old fossil, you know, that is, you know, kind of teaching the young kids. And he was, you know, really instrumental in Sundqvist and Barbashev's development last year. So he'll be missed to a point. I thought Delarose, the guy that the Blues acquired for Robbie Fabry, he played 15 shifts, played about 10 minutes, some penalty kill time. He looked pretty good. So it's just you just keep going down the roster, and you're finding guys on the Blues that can step up and contribute when needed.
Yeah, that's a recipe for success. Off season, you are going to have to worry about signing Pietrangelo. Is that resignable? Is this going to work with the cap? What are your thoughts?
I don't think there's a single Blues fan right now that isn't nervous about Pietrangelo, just simply because of what he means to this team. He is the team captain. He is the lightning rod and the leader. And he's developed into a pretty good leader. It took him a while, but he's firmly the leader on this team. He's having a really good season on the ice. And, you know, when the Blues acquired Justin Falk right before the season, the main reason I still maintain was because Falk is a power play quarterback, and something that the Blues have kind of lacked. Their power play wasn't great last year. They brought in Mark Savard in the offseason to be kind of the power play guru, and it's working out really well. But they also signed Falk to that long-term deal kind of as insurance, I think, if Pietrangelo went to free agency. And I don't think, you know, this is a situation where Pietrangelo necessarily wants to leave St. Louis. He seems to like St. Louis a lot. But at the same time, you have, you know, like Roman Josi, for instance, just a couple weeks ago signed a long-term deal, probably Pietrangelo's top comparison in free agency this year, and he gets $9 million per for 8 years. I think the Blues were hoping to keep Pietrangelo down to about $8 million per year for 8 years. And Josi getting $9 million, I think that kind of complicates things a little bit, because the Blues don't have a lot of money to throw around because of Justin Falk, because of Braden Schenn. Two good contracts, mind you, and I think Falk's going to be just fine as a Blue, and Schenn's been awesome this year. But, yeah, it is a concern, and it's thankfully it's not been a distraction so much. I still think there's optimism that they'll get a deal done, but right now, the last check I heard from Elliot Friedman, he kind of described the situation with the Blues and Pietrangelo's agents as like two prize cage fighters like circling each other right now, and just kind of waiting for the other to make the first move. So I think once that first move is made, we'll see some action. I don't think Pietrangelo is going anywhere, though.
One final question for you, Tom, and we'll let you get on with your day. When you look at the Central Division, you guys stand atop of the Central right now, and Colorado's got some injury problems. Dallas is struggling, kind of coming back a little bit now. But what team scares you the most in the Central?
Well, in the Central Division right now, I would honestly say it's probably a tie between Colorado and Nashville. Nashville remains very strong. They added Duchesne this year. That appears to be a good deal for them. I think a lot of where Nashville goes, I think, depends on Pecorine, because he's not getting any younger, and I think he's shown in recent years that he tends to fade a little bit down the stretch. And I think it's just him getting older. So I think that'll be a big key for Nashville. Colorado, I mean, they're kind of the upstarts. They, you know, unfortunately, you know, I have to bring up the fact that they kind of, you know, mugged the Flames last year in the playoffs and took your lunch money. You know, they look really strong this year. They made a lot of additions. You know, Nazem Kadri appears to be a really good pickup for them this offseason. Their defense is very strong. Grubauer looks very strong. That top line is always a threat with Rantanen, Landeskog, and McKinnon. I mean, of the two, I would say probably Colorado scares me the most. But it's kind of interesting you bring up the Central, because, you know, I think I saw the other day that if the NHL season were to end, there would be five teams out of the Pacific.
Yes,
that would be going in the Western Conference. And I had a chance to talk with Elijah Needham of the Stick and Rink podcast last week, and it's just amazing to me how strong the Pacific suddenly looks now. You have probably at least six teams that can have valid claims at going to the playoffs this year.
you know, the Pacific is, they, it is a big shock for most of the hockey world. One of the things that the Pacific is struggling with is consistency. We have six teams that are good and could make the move and make, you know, a good playoff runs, but there are teams that you'll see are winning three in a row and then dropping two and then winning two and then drop, you know, it's just, they're not putting together runs like teams like St. Louis and actually Nashville has done earlier in the year too. But it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But as of now, yeah, the Pacific is surprising a little bit.
And then, of course, the surprising thing is I mentioned six teams with valid claims. None of them is San Jose, at least right now. San Jose, what is going on there?
I don't know. Like, you know, when I looked at Dallas earlier, I kind of thought, they'll kind of figure it out, you know. And you look at some teams that get off to bad starts and you're like, well, they'll figure it out or they won't figure it out. I don't think I don't think San Jose is going to do it. In my prediction show earlier this year, I talked about this is their last year kind of kick at the can. And I think the can's maybe be taken out from underneath them. This team just doesn't look to have any heart, no drive, no push.
No, and Elijah made the good point when I talked to him last week that, you know, San Jose, their big loss this offseason was Joe Pavelski. And Pavelski was their captain for a long time, and he was kind of the lightning rod and the, you know, the straw that stirred the drink, so to speak, in San Jose. And while he hasn't, you know, got off to a great start in Dallas, I think it's hurt more San Jose just losing that, you know, getting that heart taken away from that team. And that kind of goes back into what we were talking about with Pietrangelo and the worry that the Blues lose Pietrangelo. Pietrangelo is the heart of the team. I mean, he's not a, you know, boisterous, you know, glib, you know, locker room soundbite type of guy, but he is a strong personality and he is a strong player. And that's, you know, what's happening in San Jose without Pavelski, I think could be a cautionary tale for the Blues and Petro.
Yeah, and I don't know why. My gut tells me that he's going to take a little bit of a hometown discount, and you guys will have his services for years to come. And you're right, he is a captain. He's kind of like Giordano on the Flames is.
Yeah.
Leads by example and really is an integral part of that team.
Yeah, and I know Giordano's getting up there in years for you, but it's hard to see anyone – it's hard to see him playing for anyone but the Flames at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you joining the show today, Tom, and make sure you check out Blue Notes Podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. And thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Brad. Hopefully we get to talk to each other when the Blues and the Flames are taking on each other in the playoffs. Of course, there's a bit of history with the Blues and Flames in the playoffs.
That would be wonderful.
NHL news, opinions, and controversy.
We're back with some Flames news from the week. Oliver Shillington assigned to Stockton. Davidson called up, and coaches sent him down. Their explanation was that they want him to work on the penalty kill. I can see that. I thought Shillington has struggled the last week prior to this. I think he's going to be a great, great defenseman for this team. And this is another topic that went crazy on Twitter with all the complaining and the uproar. I don't have a big problem with it. I think when you have a young guy like Shillington, it's okay for him to go down and get a little bit of work, figure things out when he's struggling, get his confidence back, and get things going. Saturday night for the Stockton Heat, he has 3 goals, a hat trick, and a loss to Tucson. On the downside, he was -3 on the night, which scares me because that means he was on the ice for 6 goals. Anyways, Shillington will be back up before you know it. It's a move that I don't disagree with and one that we'll probably pay for the young defenseman's future, and we'll see him before you know it. Folik scratched both games this week. What do you say here? He's showing us really nothing this year, which is unfortunate because I've thought through his career that Folik's, you know, a really good hockey player, and I thought this year that he'd either be on the 3M line or be an integral part on the wing on the third line. We've talked over and over that, you know, Frolik's that defensive forward that a team needs. But you know what? He's -10 this year. He leads the team on the negative side in +/-, and that's not a good place to sit. So he's found himself sitting in the press box for the last 2 games. David Riddick on pace for 66 games this year. Well, he's proven us all that he is, you know, our number one, and that's what we all wanted. But are we a little worried that maybe we're working him just a little too much? I guess time will tell there.
Every team, everywhere. The Hockey Podcast Network.
The Hockey Podcast Network and Flames Unfiltered are very excited to announce a partnership with Gong Show Hockey Apparel. Check them out. Check the Hockey Podcast Network out this week as giveaways of Gong Show Hockey Apparel start this week on the network. Let's talk a little bit about Harvey's Doghouse. Every Sunday night when we record, we come up with a player that finds himself in Harvey's Doghouse. Some weeks it's been easy. Some weeks not so much. Some weeks it is just easier than other weeks, and that is unfortunate. This week's winner, I don't know if you want to call it a winner. This week's victim is head coach Bill Peters. And many of you are chuckling now because most of you know that I am a fan of Bill Peters. But I got a couple things this week that I just don't quite understand. Although I defended his play in overtime, that he hauled the player down, I still wonder why, after this month's last month play from TJ Brody, why he was out there in overtime. It's 3-on-3. That means one defender goes out. We can't make it rotating Hanifin, Giordano, and, I mean, anybody, Anderson. We can't make it with those three and throwing on Hamonic in a pinch. We're throwing Brody out there. I don't know. I question the coach on that one. I also wonder, you can only call players out in the media so often. And I don't think Bill Peters has overdone it yet. I think we're okay there. But I'm worried, what next? If this doesn't get things going, is he going to be calling more players out? And then I think we do have a problem. I think we need to calm down. I think everybody needs to calm down right now. And this might just be the perfect week for that. With time off until next Wednesday, it is probably the best time we could have. The guys can get away from the rink a little bit. And we can get some much-needed practice time. This might just be exactly what the doctor ordered. Another question I have is he line shuffling too much? Now, I think that'll calm down because I think our first line is solidified, even though they are not producing. I think our second line with Mangiapane moving up into for a league spot is solidified, and I think our third line is solidified. My only other question is, why is the head coach sending out Lucic on the second power play unit when he's produced nothing this year? But he keeps sending him out. I don't understand. I think that if you try something, you have to give it a fair try, which he's done. But you can't keep sending him out there now. You're gaining nothing from it. Bill Peters, the victim this week on Harvey's Doghouse. We'll see if some of these things change in the week ahead. Fan question for the week. Another really good one. The question is, Frolik has been out of the lineup for two games in a row. Is this the end of his time in Calgary? Well, his agent is Alan Walsh, and last year Alan Walsh was spouting out on Twitter frequently when he didn't like where Frolik was played in the lineup. Now, this year, to my knowledge, we haven't seen anything from Mr. Walsh. I saw probably one of my favorite tweets of the year on Thursday night when Frolik was announced to be not playing and the lineup was listed. Ryan Pinder tweeted and sent it to Alan Walsh, the lineup minus Frolik. I thought that was hilarious. Just after what happened last year, I thought that was hilarious. Now the question says, is his time in Calgary near? Well, no, I don't think so. Now I think he'll be here through the end of the year, and here's why I say that. This is not like they haven't tried to trade him. It wasn't like it was a secret. Last year, through the whole offseason, and all the way through this year, Frolik has been available. Now, to the extent of how hard they've been shopping him, I don't know. But he was rumored to be part of the Zucker trade to Minnesota. more than rumored. It was almost, he said he wouldn't go. So, I mean, that wasn't even really a rumor. They've tried to move for a leak. The problem is, who wants a player that's making $4.3 million who's ineffective? It really hasn't helped his trade value by with his play. So it's not really that easy just to go trade somebody that nobody wants. And they sure as hell don't want him at $4.3 million. So I think we'll see Frolik fumbling back and forth on the third and fourth line through the rest of the season. And I don't think he can complain, and I don't think his agent can complain. I just think that's the way it's going to be. We talked about it earlier in the week that, or earlier in the show, that this was a week where the Flames could kind of hit the reset button a little bit. Just two games. They play Wednesday night in Calgary versus Dallas for the second meeting with the Stars. And then they have nothing until Saturday when they take on Arizona in Arizona Saturday afternoon. This is going to be a good week for the Flames to like take it easy, hit that reset button, enjoy life back home in Calgary for a little while. They've kind of had a rough October travel-wise, and we talked about that at the beginning of the season. So the Stars roll into town, 8-8-2, 18 points, fifth in the Central, underachieving from where we thought. But the good news in Big D is they're 7-2-1 in the last 10 after a horrific, horrific start. The Stars have really bounced back, and this is probably the time we don't really want to be playing them, but we don't get to choose that. Calgary sits tonight 10-7-3, 23 points, second place in the Central, which for a team that's sitting in second, boy, we're sure doing a lot of complaining, aren't we? The Flames are 5-3-2 in the last 10. The last meeting between these two took place in October. I believe it was on the 10th of October, 10th or 12th. I can't remember that, but either way, it was a Thursday night in Dallas, and Calgary came from behind in that one also and wins it 3-2 in a shootout. Players to watch on Saturday. Oof, I'm out of it tonight. I am tired. It's late on a Sunday night. Wednesday, players to watch, Dallas, Tyler Seguin, 3 goals in 17 games. And the biggest thing here is he's shooting at a 6% shooting percentage, which is very, very low for Seguin and very low for, I mean, anybody in the National Hockey League. Will that change? I can't help but believe a player with his talent, we're not going to see that shooting percentage start to rise. Let's just hope it holds off and doesn't do it on Wednesday night. For Calgary, I'm looking at Michael Backlund as a player to watch. 8 points in 20 games, and I think he's really improved the last 3 games. We're seeing him become more of a factor, and it could be because that Tkachuk, Backlund, and Mangiapane line is really clicking. I like that. I like the line. I like the change that was made by Bill Peters there. I think we're going to continue to see success, and I think we're going to continue to see Backlund improve his game. One last thing before we hit the road. By the way, thanks for following us on Debate at Flame Unfiltered and on Facebook. And check out our website, flamesunfiltered.com. But, oh yeah, why the hell was the organist playing Gloria in Calgary on Saturday night? Blues are in town and we're playing Gloria?
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter at Brad Brood. And if you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Consider subscribing to Inside Edge Hockey News on Patreon. That'll get you exclusive content and much more. Thanks again and enjoy the hockey.
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This has been a production of Inside Edge Hockey News Radio, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. This production is copyrighted and distributed by the Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.